Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Welcome to the Power Up Podcast. I'm your host, Trevor Scullion. Join me for some powerful conversations with members of the Substation Design Solutions Industry Consortium, the SDSIC. I'll chat with members about the consortium, innovations, how they're implementing different technologies, even some of the projects they're working on to address the growing needs of our power grid. Today's guest is Josh Clark. Josh is a design drafter at PPL Electric Utilities and the chair of our physical committee for the SDSIC. Thanks for joining me today, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. So listen, as you know, this podcast was really for SDSIC members, right? It was 1,700 strong. So we wanted everyone to get to know some of the longest standing members, get to know the chairs and co-chairs and the backgrounds of people that volunteer for this thing. So we really started with kind of all the leadership team and longstanding members, and then we'll go on further and keep going and talking to different members. So to that end, let's talk about your background a little and how you got into PPL.
Basically went to school for drafting, started out as in a precaster doing precast walls, and eventually got into PPL drafting. Hired on there. So, and then when it came time to do the, we're looking at 3D and some other things that we want to, get new technology, and get into, I was part of that initial team. As unfortunately, we had an older staff, a lot of experience, a lot of good experience, but I was the young guy of the group. So that was kind of how I got elected by default to go after new technology, being the young guy. And it evolved into, we had a team at first, and that team kind of went to team of one in the beginning. Wow. So it was just me in the beginning that stood a lot of this, with help from other people with outside of PPL to move this on. And I've been heavily involved ever since.
Wow. So what was the castings? Was it like metal castings you went to school for?
Well, I went to school for drafting, but I started with a precast. So they did precast walls. So they had a plant and they cast, controlled climate of cast panels and stuff. And then they trucked them into a job site. So basically they did big warehouses, national accounts with Lowe's, Home Depot's,
kind of neat.
Cool. If you like buildings, it was kind of neat, but.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't know that. So that was, what technology were you using when you did that?
We were using AutoCAD, but it involved it's funny. We talk about technology even here and how things progressed. And originally when I started there, we did, it was all AutoCAD and they'd go out and admit, the panels that they made, it was, by tape measure and marking the stuff off and everything on the beds. And then what it entailed till, I left there was they were actually taking that AutoCAD image. It was actually done in 3D. We actually layered it in 3D, program that we had modified, and they laser projected all that stuff on. So no longer was the tape measure used to casting the bed, and our accuracy went up tenfold. So it was quite interesting. So I was actually exposed to kind of the 3D process a little bit there in the manufacturing, you know, a little bit different from, you know, different from what we're doing today, but still that idea of 3D and being able to capture everything, you know, so accurately and stuff was important.
That's great. And that was, and when I met you, I think you were already on Inventor and everything when I met you.
Yeah, when we met, we just started, you know, had our training in Inventor, and we were getting the toolkit under, I don't know what version, one of the early versions.
Yeah. Yeah, early versions.
Early versions. And I, of the team in the beginning, the first person I met in person, and a shout out, and, you know, I know he passed, but we met Dan. We drug Dan up from Florida to PA in still the cold weather. So how we managed that, I don't know, but Dan was present. And I always remember that, that, you know, we were one of the few that I got to meet Dan in person.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Dan. So Dan Gerlach that has passed on, and we have an award for Dan up on the SDSIC website now, kind of honoring folks that are putting an innovation into the SDSIC. So yeah, thanks for that, man. It's great memories of Dan. He certainly did a lot for the industry and came up with a lot of technology back then. So yeah, he always loved working with you guys. It's one of the ways he got him out of the house.
Yeah, I always remember, you know, our conversations always seem to start up, I don't know if I'm doing it wrong or if there's an error in the program.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dan was, you know, he was, he had a master's in like rocket science and a minor in computer science. You know, so we used to tell him, it's not rocket science, Dan. Come on. You got this, right? But, you know, he'd get quiet when he couldn't explain something. So. So, dude, let's touch on some of your kind of 3D experiences then. Like, you had to have seen some pretty good advantages, like you just mentioned, even at even the work you did at PPL.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I saw it way back even before I started at PPL with, you know, like I said, at the Precaster. So, you know, it was the idea of being able to put everything into a space and work out your design and check your clearances and, you know, the bill of material to automatically develop. And I think along the way of the things that we've had and done on the projects, how much better it was, the visual experience of seeing it in 3D and what changed, helped change and modify our designs and struggle, you know, get through those challenges that we might have on any given project. I think the visual aid alone is worth everything. It explains, especially for somebody new coming in that doesn't know, you know, what's a substation, you know, and, you know, not a lot of people out there have, you know, utility experience, or you're getting people fresh out of school. You know, to be able to show stuff to them and if physically can kind of see it, you know, on a screen at least, versus, you know, having to go out in the field. And especially since it's, you know, you go out into the field, you know, there's a level of danger involved, you know, that you have to, you know, make sure you're safe. You know, there's live components there, you can't get close to anything, but, you know, in a 3D, you know, when you're working on a computer, you can see all that stuff. You don't really have to worry about getting shocked. I wouldn't say it never shocked, but it's not like being out in the field there. So I think that's, you know, that's the first and thing that you see, you know, the advantage of all this new technology and whatnot out there, that 3D has its advantages. You have those nice pretty pictures and you could show that off, and that really gets everybody oohing and wowing.
Yeah, it really is one of those technologies that once you move from kind of a 2D drafting world and you start doing 3D, it's almost impossible to go backwards. You don't want to go back to 2D and making section and elevation drawings by hand or any of that stuff, right? It's like you see the Matrix.
Yeah, you said it there. It's like having to go back and do a 2D print or update a 2D drawing. You know, it's not related to your 3D model. It's like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
It even gets to the point where, you know, it's, you know, we're using Inventor, and when I have to go to use AutoCAD, it's like, I don't want to use AutoCAD anymore.
Yeah.
Like Inventor now.
Yeah. I mean, it's without any intelligent 3D tools or anything, right? It just got painful. Painful to update a bill of material table by hand. Painful to have to update a sketch on a side view, or does it match the top view? I mean, forget that.
I think one of the things I noticed the difference is, you know, when you had AutoCAD, you just clicked on it and made it work or edited the text to say whatever you wanted it to say, where you know, an intelligent 3D model, you're not doing that. If it's coming out with the wrong text, so, well, that means my property is wrong, and I have to go in and back and edit that. You know, it's not the dumbed down thing. You know, there's a little bit more that you have to be concerned about as far as making a change, but it's nice when you make the change in the model and then your 2D drawing is, you know, already updated when you get there. So,
yeah, that's right. Yep, you focus on the model and the drawings are free.
Yep.
I remember looking at hand drawings. It was clearly a rectangle, but if you looked at the two dimensions, it was like 36 by 36. Because someone just changed the text, right? It's like, well, yeah. Well, that's confusing as hell.
I can never get past, well, it looks like it's square. This is supposed to line up with one another, and it really is not supposed to. It's just how somebody sketched it in.
It was creative. Very creative.
Yeah. That's for sure. Is it really a straight line?
Yeah. Well, you know, and you were one of the first people with PPL that was showing and really talking about VR, you know, like, I mean, years ago, I remember talking with you and we were trying to set up some demos and things, but you were really kind of pushing that envelope. You touched on 3D, but you were really thinking about training and trying to do all that stuff many years ago.
Yeah, we were actually, I remember that early on working with you, that we actually accomplished taking one of our substations that we had modeled in Inventor and pushing it all the way into VR and being able to walk it. That was, and we actually used it as we got new engineers in, and while we were in the office, we used it as an experience for them to, you know, people got a real kick, especially, you know, as you get to the younger folks that are more into technology and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So getting to see that was quite the thing. Our challenge with that was just the sheer massive data and all the parts that we had to do something like that. And I was actually working on with a gaming engine to try and, you know, make something, and I'm by no means am I a programmer, so that probably that's why it didn't go so well. But I had one of our subs in a gaming engine that I could kind of like walk around and had some kind of clash detection on it, so that it didn't allow you to actually walk into a building or kept you away from a structure. You could actually walk into the building, into the entrance, you know, the right, you know, the door and everything. You can actually go into the control cube. But and awesome. I was actually getting, you know, trying to get some of the data over and stuff was, you know, somewhat of a challenge. But I had it so that the parts were actually showing up, that, you know, you select the individual parts, they were kind of highlighting, and then and unfortunately, things with the job, you know, you had to change focus and commit. Couldn't spend all the time that I wanted to on that. That was definitely, would certainly like to pick that up one of these days again. But,
you know, like anybody early into that, man, you started that early and you were on the bleeding edge, because it's certainly come a long way now. And it's probably a lot more we could do if we took another visit to that. But you were pretty early, man. So it was bleeding edge trying to get that stuff going. But
it was good
foresight.
A lot of that stuff out there that, you know, free to use, just couldn't handle the sheer size of our models and everything. Yeah. We definitely, I think back then we were pushing the breaking limit of a lot of things.
That's right. They said, oh, that's why they charge for software. There you go. It's got, that's really, yeah, the freebies are tough to compile. Well, that's good, man. So let's talk about how you got involved with the SDSIC, because I remember you being there early. I don't know how long you've been there now.
It was our first time visiting was down in Alabama. Birmingham, whatever year, I always lose track. Whatever. Yeah. I know we started our 3D journey kind of like we went, you know, to a couple of utilities. I think Duke was one of the big ones that we talked to in the beginning as far as, you know, benching with, but we kind of started on our own before getting onto the consortium, and somewhat I wish we wouldn't have had to, you know, cause especially because it was at the time that was, like I said before, it was really just me. So having somebody else to bounce questions off of and this and that when we were getting started would have been a great help. Somehow we managed to get something working. And then when we joined the consortium and everybody kind of looked at the landscape of everything, and wow, we were right there with some of the people that had started the consortium kind of by kind of, you know, I'll say a little bit of luck involved in that. But, I think it was a little bit of a miss on our part to not sign up as early. You know, we were encouraged to get involved, but we didn't. We held back a little bit, and I think we would have been better off getting in, especially once we made that commitment when we were doing this type of thing, to get involved, just have somebody else to talk to and work through ideas, because, you know, it's so a massive amount of scope of what you're trying to do. And it's hard to focus in on those little pieces sometime, or you get sidetracked on some of the little pieces and forget about the bigger picture. So, but that was our involvement. And I think I attended one face to face, and next thing I know, I got on the monthly meetings and started participating, and they're asking me to do more.
So was it the, I'm wondering, like, who first got you involved? Cause I know you were co-chair first for the physical committee.
So one of our founding members, I hope we'll hear from him on one of these podcasts soon. Jeremy Morton was, the guy that reached out to me and got me. He was the chair at the time of the physical committee, and he needed a co-chair, and, he reached out to me and asked me if I was interested. And, basically he started my involvement as far as the leadership here at the consortium. And then I also have to shout out to John Thomas, who was the chair of the whole consortium at the time as well. Great support and really coaching me on a lot of my speaking, you know, my public speaking and just helping me along be a leader of this organization. So those two guys really, started off, and of course yourself, Trevor, there as well, helping me out with things.
Yeah, you've done a great job, Josh. And yeah, I mean, big shout out to Jeremy. So I did get Jeremy on a podcast. We just have to edit it and get it published. But yeah, I had Jeremy on. I'm trying to track down John Thomas too. So yeah, I mean, dude, they're such good mentors in the whole consortium, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'd never met them before, talked to them before I got involved with the consortium. I had no idea who they were, but they welcomed me with open arms like anybody, I think, here at the consortium will. You know, it's just such a friendly environment and everybody wants to help each other out. And it showed really what the consortium is about not only, you know, helping you out as far as, you know, the work things that you're doing, you know, the challenges there, but then just as a person and, you know, being a leader and everything, you have a lot of great support there especially from members that have been involved for such a long time or there at the beginning.
Yeah, it's been great watching you grow, man. You have really, and Jeremy did give you a shout out on his podcast when you hear that. It's been very impressive to see how you picked it up and ran with it, right? You know, Jeremy touches on it, like a lot of introverts in engineering and design that are in the office making things happen, but not someone to get up on stage and talk in front of 1,000 people, right? So it's way out of your comfort zone.
We're like those typical people you think of, you know, locked in your cubes and weird individuals that you show light and they go hiss and, you know, everything else.
That's like everything you just described is a perfect lead-in for the SDSIC for all the new folks listening, right? It's maybe not the most coddled group, but everyone's there to support you and help and try to get you involved, and there's no bad ideas that are shouted out. Everyone's taken serious, and there's some great ideas and concepts that come from those kinds of discussions anyhow.
Oh, absolutely, because it's so big, as broad as what we're trying to do. So, you know, kind of everybody's working on little pieces. So you pick up little things, whether you're, you know, been doing this for years or just getting involved, you know, to get started at, but everybody's so open, you know, about, you know, sharing and helping one another with things in that environment. And I hope listening to some of this stuff that you can see that we have a good time and we're not, you know, we do, you know, get stuff done and do the work and stuff, but very friendly group and, you know, with each other. It's, you know, kind of, you know, some of my best friends now are part of this consortium and met through all this, you know, working together and networking.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, and it has been, you know, we keep it pretty light, and I think it's great to have it kind of lighthearted and a lot more discussions happen because folks don't feel threatened and there's no kind of animosity, right? And they just get the ideas flowing.
Yeah, and I think everybody's so approachable. You know, you can come up to anybody as far as, you know, the leadership or experienced people and strike up a conversation. They're, you know, anybody's more than welcome. And it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, a drafter like myself or, you know, all the way to an executive. I've met executives of big companies and stuff, and I can talk to them just as I would talk to a fellow drafter or engineer.
Yeah.
Whatnot. So I think that's, you know, one thing that's really impressed me over the run and involvement with the consortium.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a great point for all the folks just joining and just getting started here. And I want to just point out that you've done such a good job. You got reelected again, didn't you?
Yeah. Yep. Sign up, and you're stuck with me for another 2 years.
No, but it's a big shout out to you that you kept going. You did such a good job. I don't think anyone even felt that you needed to be challenged for any kind of, you know, everybody. I mean, everyone I talked to said, no, Josh has got to do it again. Like, we can't let him leave.
I don't want to let go.
Yeah. So it's great, man. Congratulations. So that was Kansas, right? You got reelected again as chair.
Yep. We got reelected. Appreciate that shout out. You know, again, I try the best that I can and give everything that I got towards it and, you know, keep everybody involved, you know, from beginners to, you know, people that have been there for time. I want to make sure I'm hitting everybody, you know, that everybody finds value within something that we're doing, you know, here in the physical committee, at least that I can control.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's very true that I think early on, just trying to get people involved and, you know, trying to keep them involved. It's, you know, it's volunteer work. You don't get paid. It's all extra outside of your current day-to-day jobs and everything. So, you know, big thanks to you for doing it for so long and keeping it going and doing such a great job, man. It's every monthly call, yours is the most filled committee by far. It's just been absolutely incredible the amount of interest you get every month, and at the meetings themselves, it's the biggest room pretty much all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's been many a face-to-faces where, you know, our committee's been bursting at the seams in in some of the meetings. You know, I think that's, you know, part of our content, and, you know, we have some great presenters that, you know, present all the time out there, you know, trying to, you know, get everybody involved on that. And like you said, you know, I don't know what it is, but we've had an uptick too in our monthly calls as far as the people attending, it seems, or, you know, especially at the beginning of the year, our numbers have been high. So shout out to everybody that's, you know, been on those calls, and thank you, and keep supporting us.
Yeah, that's true. So let's touch the monthly calls. Let's talk about that a little bit, because I know, you know, it's tough when some folks are coming in, and that's kind of what we're hoping this podcast will do, is give people a chance to listen to it and understand what your committee is about and everything before they get on a call. You know, your name pops up on the Zoom and you're worried you're gonna get called out or questioned or anything. But let's talk about the monthly calls. Like, what's the expectation? Just people join and you guys have a chat about what?
Yeah. I'll say, I will start out with answering the one question, is I don't call people out. I mean, the only one that I may call out is some of our software supporters, you know, that we have on the line. You know, we typically, you know, have those software people there throughout, you know, the monthly calls, or like my co-chair or something, just if I forgetting something, and or other consortium leadership. That's about all you will hear me call out anybody.
There you go.
On the thing, as far as anybody else, I do not call anybody else out. We do pretty regular meet every, you know, month. I think when we have a face-to-face meeting or something like that, do I cancel a meeting out there? But, you know, for the most part, you know, I try and update everybody on, you know, what's going on overall with the consortium, if there's any news on that stuff, and really try and dive into what the, you know, what we're doing with 3D is, you know, offer people a chance to ask questions, or, you know, are they stuck on anything? We get a lot of software updates from the tools that we use within our meeting. So, you know, we're always kind of kept up there, and anything, you know, try and promote anything that else that may, our community may find useful. Whether it's new, you know, what's new with new programs, or, you know, this or that, you know, that you know, other members are supporting other webinars on there. We just started a subcommittee for documentation. So we have, as far as all the other committees go, I think we have the most best practices in the industry already. We've decided to put a new focus, and I started a subcommittee to try and get more help with that, you know, alleviate a little bit of pressure for myself. You know, obviously I can't write all of them. I need, you know, some supporters to write those, but, you know, try and get some best practice. I mean, I think back to one of our simple best practices is just where they have the Z axis. And, you know, we set the standard of having the Z axis up. So it really allows for, you know, when you're sharing models and stuff, that you're getting something that you can use right away from somebody else if you do some of these common little things on there. So we're looking for more things like that do best practice. And I always do a section that I call show and tell, and really it's to do some kind of demo or something with whatever 3D related software. I'd love for more people to be a part of it as far as showing what they're working on. Typically that's a lot of where I get my ideas, that I show stuff, just showing you, you know, what I'm doing on a project and, you know, using 3D or, you know, something that came up, whether it was creating drawings or creating a model. I think their last meeting, I just showed, you know, how to, you know, work kind of smarter versus harder type of approach. And we were doing, putting a cabinet on a breaker, and we're doing it a number of times, you know, where we're putting the same install where, you know, having a cabinet and conduit and, you know, a bunch of pieces that go on there. So, you know, just that I created assembly that I can actually attach, a little sub assembly that I can attach to another big assembly, but I can just copy it throughout. I really only had to build one, built it a little smarter so that it can go in and plop on these other locations, but it just goes, you know, showed kind of a little bit of how I did that, and that it can just, you know, get copied, you know, copied around and plopped around on all these other breakers. But I really only had to build one assembly to do that. And, you know, you get that advantage of being able to quickly do, you know, I think it's 6-7 breakers that we were doing.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You know, so now that to copy my work, instead of putting all those pieces in, you know, 7 times on the breaker, you know, that's a lot of work versus, oh, now I just copy my assembly, boom, over and done. You know, on to the next one. So, you know, you know, I always try and bring something like that, or, you know, if somebody has a question for me, even like, you know, that I get ahead of time, maybe, I think that's a good one. I'll show what we did, at least in a start conversation, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, vault or 3D, you know, some of the like folder setup. And we've had some good conversations that just started out like something simple like that, talking about what to do with a vendor model or something. Yeah, that stuff. So really try and bring something that, you know, everybody can use and get a piece. I mean, I had somebody saw the model that I was, you know, showing this past month and noticed something on there and asked me, you know, a question about it, you know, later after the meeting, you know, send me an email and it wasn't even something per se that I was presenting about, but just something that they noticed within the model and just asked me how I did that and what they were curious. So then, you know, by showing stuff like that, you'll generate questions like that maybe somebody, you know, they don't want to reach out on the call, but, you know, they will reach out to you and more than happy to try and get you an answer. I tell her all the time.
Yeah. See, that's good. That's a good explanation of the monthly calls. And so for all the members, you know, that are listening and thinking of joining, and, you know, it's really that I love the show and tell. I mean, some of the projects that you guys show, Mark Thomas from Duke, and like you guys showed, yeah, just an example of like, I'm not saying this is the way to do it. I'm just showing you how we did it for this specific project. Yeah, you know, people ask questions, you get to show them, kind of like you said, show and tell and go through it. I even like the technology stuff where, you know, some user will say something like, hey, have you ever tried this add-in for Inventor, right? And you get it from the Autodesk store and maybe it fills out bill of material. I don't know, anything. Like everything is wide open. And the more open collaboration you have with just that kind of show and tell, man, the ideas that come out are amazing.
Oh, you talk about the ideas. I think back to, you know, obviously you've been part of the consortium for a while, part of some of the tools that we've used. We've seen the evolution of some of those tools through the years. And you look back at some of the things that got changed or added to these tools it really came down to those monthly calls, those conversations, you know, and the challenges that were brought up. And how, you know, somebody asked, well, how can I get this to run from here to there? You know, A to B, it won't connect. Or, you know, I want to run, I know in the beginning, you know, we can only run one cable at a time, where you have one to run two or three, you know, multiple cables. And really that came apart, you know, some of that came a part of, you know, being in the monthly calls and people, you know, saying that they have, you know, challenges with this and presenting. And it wasn't, you know, something we kind of maybe worked through at the time, but the software eventually caught up and the tools that we used to some of those things. So I always think of those enhancement ideas. A bunch of them have started within the monthly calls and whatnot, and people talking to each other, presenting their problems.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah. You know,
the fixes that we've gotten.
Yeah, that's another great point for all the folks listening, right? I mean, as a software person, I used to leave those calls with like a list of things we had to look at and try to do and try to improve. But, you know, that's a point for folks joining your call, you know, challenge the software guys. You know, you don't need to just listen and watch. You got to ask them, hey, can you do this or that? Or, you know, here's a challenge, you know, could you do that with the software? And yeah, it's all those enhancements come from those conversations.
Yeah, I remember those early days. You'd come with that list, and we had to, you know, which ones do you want first?
Yeah, like, let's list the number of these things. Yeah.
And of course, somebody, you know, always chimed in all, you know, first comment back. But you know, really, when it come down to it, you know, said no, this is more important than this, and we'd work through it, and you know, you'd have your top 10 or whatever it might be from a list of 20 or 40. I think in those early days.
Yeah, no, you're right on the money, dude. All the memories are coming back. I remember all those times we were doing that, but it's such a good thing. And it's the same with Autodesk or, you know, partners. We have ImagineIt coming to meetings now. They're doing training. They have all these techniques and things. There's a lot of things that can happen from those, including Vault workflows, as you mentioned, right? Folders and different ways to do it. Once they, you know, they can listen to the calls, listen to the projects, and they, as vendors, understand what we're trying to do with this utility space. And then they come back with like, hey, you know, look at this example. It's a win-win all around. And I was going to ask you what you wanted from members, but I guess that's it, right? Bring your questions, bring your challenges, bring your
show. Yeah, pretty much. It's, you know, even like I said before, it don't matter what level of experience, you might be looking at something a little bit different that nobody else looked at. And it, you know, might spur a conversation, an enhancement needed, or, you know, something that we can add to our model. I think about, you know, we hear a lot with some of the, you know, as we go forward here in the committee's data is everything. As far as, and what to do with that data really becomes, you know, what can you do with that data? I mean, there's, you know, the sky's the limit, I think, with some of that stuff. Obviously there's some hurdles that we have in the utility aspect of things to about that data, but that really, you know, you can put with an intelligent model, you can put all kinds of data, usable data there that can be used by different things. And really, I look at some of the visions and the conversations we've had here in my company, PPO, that really that model that we're building, that 3D model with all this data, is becoming the center point to almost everything out there. And really kind of neat when you think about it, when you're working on something that everybody's going to use, everybody's going to see, gives you that importance and that pride in what you're creating.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. And that's where we see all the conversations now around digital twins and, you know, this metaverse, the spatial web, right? We, all of it needs that 3D content, or otherwise there's not a lot to look at.
Yeah, I mean, it's all got to be grounded somewhere. And really, that seems to be, for the most part, and a lot of that, it's on the 3D model side of things. It seems to be, you know, where a lot of that stuff's going to be grounded at or linked to based on the model, which presents its own challenges in there. But it's a nice challenge. It's, I think, back to some of the things that I've accomplished with the 3D. It's always those getting those challenges completed and getting something to work the right way and to show up this way, or write an logic code and have it function the way you want it to function. And I think those are always the neat things, and kind of break up the day to day when you can get on some of those things and look into some of that new stuff.
It's always good. Like, you know, it's one of the reasons we started that innovative solutions committee with Ernie Barton from Southern. I mean, that, you know, the purpose is to look far down the road and see what's coming, you know, what's really useful, not just the marketing noise around technology, but what are the things we could really take advantage of? And, you know, you need to think about that now as you're adding all this data to the 3D models, right? Like you need to kind of prepare at least to know what's coming down.
I always tell people when you're looking at things, you got to have an eye to the future. And that was, you know, told to me, and I share that same message. You know, to keep an eye on, you know, it not just about what you want to do today to accomplish today. It's about what do you want to do in the future? What would you like this to do? Because you can definitely, it's not that you would fail doing it in the future by no means, but it might be a little bit harder to correct it, where, you know, you can do a simple way as you put things together today, individualize things today will help you tomorrow. And I think a lot of that comes from keeping that eye, you know, what could be next.
There you go. Yep. One little attribute in the metadata today, and all of a sudden you can do all these connections downstream you didn't think about, but you have to go back and add it to 18,000 models. It's kind of a little more painful.
I've had to go through, you know, I'll speak from some of my experience. You know, when we started out, you had your list of properties, and when you know you're getting thrown all these models, and the way we were doing everything, you know, just dumping and trying to build our library up and everything, well, you know, some stuff wasn't exactly perfect, and I don't remember how many parts were in the list. I mean, we're talking hundreds, I think even thousands of parts that I had to go through. And I think it was fix one or two properties. I literally had to go through our vault and fix all these properties of all these parts. And I remember, you know, it's like, okay, today I'm going to work on it for an hour and just cross these off. And it took me days, weeks to do it. But, you know, one of those things, but you can manage. It was, you know, managed at least, yeah, that we were able to, you know, somebody was able to, you know, capture the data and put it in a spreadsheet so I can kind of follow along. Okay, what did I need to edit, you know, what parts do I really need, and then find them. And it wasn't that bad, other than the fact that you had to go through the amount of parts that you actually had to go through. But since then, I think we're much better off. You know, hey, everything got updated and whatnot, so we don't have to worry about those mistakes hopefully happening again.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you do once and you never forget.
Nope, you never forget.
That's some great points, man. And so I wanted to ask you before we finish up, the 10th anniversary, man, the live event going into Nashville. You've been around for so long at the SDSIC. Is there anything kind of special you want to see happening on the 10th year?
Just more people get involved. Don't be afraid to, you know, speak up or, you know, bring your questions forward. New and old people, it doesn't matter whether you've been there before and had just a couple people, you know, they've been there before, were a great part, and then, you know, jobs change or whatever, but we've seen them come back, and I encourage them to stay involved and for new people to get involved on there. But there's no dumb questions, you know, that type of thing out there. So I think and hopefully, you know, we look back at these 10 years of where we were in the beginning, and you know, you really, for folks like myself that have been involved for so long, you really see the growth of what's changed between, you know, what we do today and what we had been doing, and, you know, of course, all the technology. I mean, like we said before, you know, a lot of that stuff has been rooted in here at the consortium. It's changed because of, you know, the challenges and stuff that we faced together and whatnot. So I'm encouraged to see what new things we'll be developing in the next 10 years and beyond.
Yeah, and it's true, like a lot of the evolution that comes from it, you know, from the software vendors, you know, the SBS and Autodesk and Bentley out there, now Primtech and all these guys coming in and watching and listening. And you have such a stronger voice with the SDSIC because you're as strong as every single utility that's joined.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, one utility asking for a feature or an automation function or something. It's everybody that gets together, and it's pretty compelling for a software vendor to listen to.
Yeah. How they piece it all together, but you can see, you know, that the voice of the consortium has weighed on these software companies, and you see the changes, you know, over the years that made to these programs and for our benefit. So it's, they're not going to discover that stuff or do any of that stuff if nobody says anything. So, you know, somebody's got to say, bring it up, and then, you know, everybody, oh yeah, that's a good idea. You know,
yeah,
it'd really be nice if the program did that, or, you know, work this way instead of that way. And we've seen those changes come across. So, definitely our voice means something.
There's been a lot of features that have been set up and come out of the SDSIC.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that our software, you know, partners that have been involved, you know, they send folks to the face-to-face, that there, you know, you can chat and really see what's the pains or, you know, what the challenges the consortium faces, and really take that back to their companies and do something about it. So
yeah,
it's encouraging. Cool.
Awesome, man. Anything else you want to touch on before we close up?
I just share a little bit, you know, for those out there, maybe, you know, looking at this and thinking about the benefits of 3D, I'll share a little bit of a story that we had as far as one of our, and this is going back a number of years now, of an old project we were doing. You know, we were still kind of new at 3D. We had, you know, kind of our philosophy done and, you know, model library built, and we get challenged to do a project, a brownfield project. We were doing something that wasn't a little bit out of the norm that we were doing. It was a small project, but the engineer really wanted to do it in 3D. One of the things, we were changing the location of some switches, and the field had concerns on where that switch was. Would there be access to that switch? And, you know, we kind of modeled all, you know, did the design and stuff in 3D, worked through that, and was able to, you know, the design went real quick because of, you know, a couple of visual aids, just sharing some screenshots, and you can created all that stuff. But I remember going to a meeting, you know, a pre-construction meeting, and, you know, the field was there and really plainly showed and didn't really use anything, you know, any kind of presentation software, just really opened up the model. We had a figure modeled of like a 6-foot person, just to show, you know, like, you know, how a person could be. And really, it was a pole operated switch. I just had them holding like a pole that, you know, a 10-foot pole that they would use, and just kind of moved them around the model with all within Inventor. Like I said, no fancy software and presenting, but and by showing them that answer, there was no follow-up questions as far as that issue. That made everything, answered all their questions. Would there be enough room to get back there and whatnot? And so that was, you know, a great experience. But as we continued on the project, and we had to add steel to the structure, and I, for whatever reason, I don't remember, I got to go out to the field and I got to actually talk to the field crew, which, you know, Drafter never does.
Yeah.
Never does. But I was out there, and they were doing two structures, the same thing on both structures. And they had the one done, and the guy told me, I said, you know, I was explaining to him that we did this in 3D, we did it new, so I'm just kind of curious, you know, how did things go? And he said, well, to be quite frank, this is the easiest project I've ever worked on. And he said, the steel went up. He said, we've always had trouble. He said, I budgeted 3 days to hang the steel on the structure that needed to be hung up to hang the new equipment. They did it in a day, because everything went smoothly. He said, I have all the confidence in the world on the other side of it that it's going to go up just as smoothly. And I think back to that's, you know, that's one of the benefits of 3D, being able to put all those pieces of steel together and, you know, kind of like bolt it together yourself within a program and everything, and you know, have all the pieces. They had all the pieces. There were no material issues with anything at that site. So, you know, really, you know, and that was one of our early on projects and stuff. But to hear that you know, time was saved out in the field, and material was, you know, done, you know, back to the design things, just with the simple pictures and not even doing kind of like a full-on presentation, just literally opening up the model and showing it, you know, answered everybody's questions. It went smooth from my perspective. I don't know about, you know, other areas of the project or whatever, but from my perspective on the physical side of things, everything, I don't think you could have asked for anything better at that time.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, just awesome. Just wanted to share a little bit of, you know, some actual project experience applying this, I think that's a little bit where some people struggle out with doing this. We want to get and we want to do 3D models, but you know, how do we apply it to those projects? And you know, it's on small projects like that that you can, you know, really try and start. You can kind of work through some of those workflow things. It's still not even some of the companies like ourselves that are starting, you know, really to do more and more, you know, look at there, you know, there's still challenges within that. You know, how do you get that day-to-day stuff in there? And really it comes back to that model being the center point. I mean, we're working on something now where the drawings are becoming less and less important, the actual 2D prints, which is ultimately, when you talk to some people out there in the industry, really where you want to go with this stuff. You have a model now and you want to kind of put that model in the hands and that model be the record and stuff. What do you need drawings for? And they're really just being treated for construction. And it seems that's, you know, kind of our latest of what we're doing and trying to accomplish.
It's such a good message because, you know, it's more work to get the model library set up than it is to modify 2D brownfield prints, you know, old station prints. It's a lot easier to stretch them and clean them and just modify stuff that way. It's a lot more work, obviously, to build a 3D model library and get it up. But there's so many benefits that it just quickly, as you just said, 3 days to 1 day in the field. That's expensive.
Yeah. From where I came from in a manufacturer, I mean, time in the field was everything, you know, didn't matter, you know, kind of somewhat the time that we spent in the office. If we could save that time in the field, cut any of that down from having a crew or equipment out there, if you can cut any of that down, the company was saving money. Or, you know, making more money, you know, because, you know, we can put them on other projects and stuff. So that was the name of the game. So I think anytime you hear any of that, it's people perk their, you know, their ears perk up and whatnot, you know. So, I could save time. I could save money then, you know. It's all about the important dollar.
Yeah. Well, and you think of, you know, the field crew that's out there and having to be out there for 3 days versus 1 day.
Yeah, or, you know, if you're trying to get something done in between weather, you know, the storm just cleared up and we got an opening, but it's only going to be so long until the next one rolls in.
Yeah.
You know, and when you talk about, you know, in our environment, outages, so the least amount of time you need to take that outage, the better.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's where it starts to pay off, right? So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Thanks, man. Dude, that's such a good message, man. I love it. You're promoting the physical group already. Always promoting, always selling. So there you go. Join Josh, get on the calls. Show and tell is awesome, and bring your questions, right? No bad questions.
Yep, no bad questions. Love to hear from you.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this today, Josh.
Yep, thank you. And don't anybody listening out there, feel free to reach out to me anytime.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Power Up Podcast today. If you enjoyed this conversation and you're not yet a member of the SDSIC, join for free at sdsconsortium.com. Be part of the community and all these great conversations. And maybe you'll be the next guest on the Power Up Podcast.